Nos waith dda, croeso i'r Couple's Guide to Stranger Things podcast. Sian ydw i.
Tom ydw i.
And we're just a couple who likes to take the mick out of each other.
I'm so confused.
I wanted to get revenge, people. Every single week, Tom says something different when it comes to his name. And I live in a state of anxiety, not knowing what he's going to say and how I'm going to talk. But I decided I'd treat you all to a little bit of Welsh. So for those that didn't understand, hello and welcome back to the Couple's Guide to Stranger Things podcast. I am still Sian.
And I'm so confused.
And we're just a couple of... Oh, I couldn't think of what I was meant to say. We're a couple of super fans who met through our love of Stranger Things.
Right, now that that's all out of the way, we have watched The Spy, Chapter 6, and now we're going to do our best to stay on topic. Oh, dear.
I totally got you there.
Yeah, you did.
I couldn't get through it though because I wish you could all have seen the look on his face.
Oh dear, 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 dear. You don't want to. I'd break many cameras.
Don't say that. Shall we dive in?
Oh, nobody's taken a dive in this episode, have they? Like Steve did?
What?
He dives into action.
That was terrible.
I know.
So, chapter 6.
The Spy.
The Spy. And it starts in a very joyful manner. You know, it's all roses and happiness.
Yeah.
No.
It leaves that original.
That is a lie.
It leaves that original rushing to your imagination with the black screen for a bit, just with the sound. And then, yeah, Will is pretty much burning alive.
Yeah, it's pretty gruesome. Because obviously we can't see anything, but Nowhere is so good at... He's just a good actor, you know, yeah. And he's so good at displaying how Will is feeling, and you feel it. You almost cringe because you're like, oh my God, you know, this child is in agony.
Yeah, that's it. He does play this pain, this searing, burning pain on the inside.
Yeah.
Really well.
I think in season 2, Noah just really let it go. I think because he has so little screen time in season 1, it was like he was almost trying to prove his worth, maybe.
Yeah. Makes you wonder why they wasted him in season 3.
Yes, but we're not talking about season 3.
At this point, I've just got to find anywhere to slot it into every episode because I've managed to so far.
he's really, really good. And yeah, so he's there, he's on oxygen, you know, they're asking him, where does it hurt? And he's like,
everywhere!
Exactly. And well, that's happening to poor Will. You've got Hopper literally being decontaminated. Like, I'm sure they're like, are they using like scrubbing brushes on him?
It genuinely looks like a...
Like a garden brush.
Like a garden brush, yeah. Like, ow.
Very sharp bristles. And I mean, he is kind of like, he's not screaming, but he is like complaining.
No, he's in pain.
He's in pain. So that's it. It's a very, very... chaotic start to a very exciting episode.
Yeah, no, it's such a good episode.
It is. I think it's probably one of my favourites from season 2. There's so much that happens. So I'm sure you're in for a long episode, but we'll try our best.
Either that or a double parter again.
Yeah, potentially. Your voice went from then. Parter. A double parter.
I want to say you're a wizard, Potter, but no, it's Wizard Harry.
Potter. You're a wizard, Potter. Oh, that sounded like Farter. Oh, God. We're not even delirious today and we're still being silly.
You're not? Who says I ain't?
I actually got a lie-in today, people. I had a lie-in for the first time in 4 months. So you're probably getting me at my best. And the fact that I just laughed about parter and farter is quite concerning, that is me at my best.
If you're tuning in to our podcast, I say every week, nearly every week, you know what you're coming for.
Madness.
So you can't complain. You can't blame us. You're doing this to yourself by listening to us.
These poor people are probably in their car driving and like, oh, why am I doing this?
Why are you?
It's like a guilty pleasure though, isn't it? You know it's true. You just can't switch off.
Because you know we're the best podcast out there, don't you?
I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, that.
Hush now.
The best podcast.
We can dream.
Out of all the podcasts going.
I can dream.
Oh my God. Oh, sweetheart.
Oh, my sweet summer child.
My sweet summer child. Right, anyway. Here I was going, we'll try and get through it as quickly as we can and then completely deviated.
Not a chance.
So, after all that chaos that is happening at the lab, we then
I thought you were going to say after all the chaos that's happening here.
And here. We have Steve and Dustin. They're in the car. And it was interesting for me, actually, because I couldn't make my mind up whether I thought Steve thinks it's all over or not. And the reason is because he is saying to Dustin, because they're on their way to go and see Dart, where Dustin's put him in that kind of underground bunker kind of thing. And he's like, are you sure it wasn't a lizard? And he sounds so disinterested. Yeah. And I feel like, say for instance, Dustin had been able to find Mike. Obviously Mike would have took him seriously because he'd seen Dart. But if he'd found Nancy then, or Jonathan, I feel like they would have taken it seriously. Yeah. And very much been on like high alert. So at first I was thinking, wow, Steve really does think it's all over and he's not at all on alert. But then he has the bat in the boot. So I'm trying to think of the word. Oh, the trunk for our American followers. He has the bat in the trunk. And yeah, I'm so torn as to whether I think Steve thinks it's all done or not.
He seems to have that mannerism, I think. Yeah. Whether it's out of wanting to believe it is. But what came to my thought is he had a lot less to deal with in season one.
Oh, that's very true.
Because he's not brought in until like the later episodes.
Yeah. And it's not like he was very close with Barb. He wasn't.
No, God, no. He wasn't close to Barb in the slightest.
Yeah.
I don't think he really cares about her that much at all, to be honest. No. Except for in proxy through Nancy. But, yeah, because he was only brought in at the later point and just had to whack a Demogorgon a few times, which I'm not downplaying that, you know, he does really well.
Yeah.
But because of that, I feel like he kind of probably does think it was a one-and-done deal.
Yeah.
Like, this one entity from some other place managed to get in, now they've beaten it up and got it out, Elle's gone, the job's a good one.
And I suppose what happened in season one didn't really change him as a person. Like, it changed Nancy, of course, because she had all this trauma, she lost Barb, and she had the guilt as well. Obviously, it changed people like Mike, it changed Elle, changed Hopper, changed Joyce, changed Will, of course. But it didn't really change Steve, because he could almost forget about that experience with the Demogorgon as something that he could maybe even pretend never happened.
Exactly, and I think...
Yeah, but it's just the fact that he's got that bat in the boot that I'm like,
Yeah, exactly, and I'm pretty sure at some point he does say that, doesn't he? He just say that we're just pretending it didn't happen.
Yeah, he does earlier.
Because that's in the party, isn't it? It's in a party. It's the reason it's why
kind
they
kind of like multiple times. Because yeah. When Barb talks, sorry, when Nancy talks to him about Barb, and at the party, so that it's more so in the classroom, and then that leads on to the fight at the party where she's like, "Oh, you know, we're meant to be acting and pretending we're in love and all this stuff."
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so. You know, he's very much said himself he wants to pretend it never happened.
Yeah.
He wants to forget it, you know, forget it all.
Yeah.
It's hard because I can imagine why you would want to forget something like this.
Especially when you don't have an emotional attachment to it.
Exactly. It'd be easy for someone like Steve, who, again, like I say, only really dealt with that one Demogorgon for a little bit.
Yeah.
It'd be very easy for him to forget it. Unlike Nancy losing her best friend. In the most horrible way.
Yeah.
Unlike Mike, who's just watched his new love of his life vanish into a cloud of dust.
And thinking his best friend had died as well.
Yeah. Obviously, they got Will back, but he's suffering.
Yeah, he's suffering.
You know, he's constantly in lab, being tested on and all of that. And I think Dustin and Lucas have a much easier time of putting it behind them. Because they didn't really have that emotional attachment to Will. Obviously, they... love her as a friend.
Yeah.
You know, full well. But compared to Mike, nah.
But again, in proxy, compared to Will, and I mean, it does sound like season 5 is going to give us more of an insight into what it was like for Will that week in the Upside Down.
Yeah.
Which is exciting and kind of heartbreaking all at the same time.
Yeah, I can imagine it being a one hell of a heartthrob.
Yeah, yeah.
Of an air. I would say of an episode of a series.
Yeah,
of
definitely.
A season. Yeah.
I know. And it's exciting.
But, yeah, the whole rumour that it's going to be, what is it, 8 episodes? But at least 2 hours long each.
Oh, I really hope so.
Like,
it's what it deserves.
It
There's
really
so
is.
Much that needs to be finished and explained. Yeah, we need 2 hours an episode.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder if they're going to do it as 2 volumes again. Because of that.
I think they will. That seems to be the trend at the moment with different shows as well.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be in 2 parts.
Yeah, that's it. I wouldn't be surprised if they split it in half.
I mean, when we get to it, that will drive me insane.
Absolutely.
And I'll want to rip all my hair out. But at the same time, it means that the final season will go on for longer.
Exactly.
And
it's not
I don't
just,
mind.
It's not just one and done.
We'll get that kind of excitement twice.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm kind of on board with it, you know. I am expecting that to be the way they do it. So with Steve, no matter if he does believe it's all over or not, when he goes into that kind of underground shelter of Dustin's looking for Dart, and he does say to him, you know, if it's a prank, you know, he's going to kill him.
Yeah.
He then finds Dart's much larger shedded skin and of course a huge hole in the wall.
Yeah, exactly. Dart's been making his own tunnels.
So I'm sure then he's like, oh no.
Oh no.
Insert Phoebe Buffay.
One of these days I'll remember to edit in these sound clips.
Yes, yeah, it'll happen. Although knowing our look, it'll be pulled up as copyright.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I'm not still bitter about YouTube, but I am.
Hey, Google. We don't like you.
Is it Google?
Google and YouTube. They bought it in, like, 1945.
Google, I'm not impressed with you. You're usually one of my doctors. I'm going to have trust in you.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Anyway... back to the show. So we're back to the lab, actually. They've been at the buyer's house collecting evidence, taking all the pictures. It does make me laugh. This actually doesn't come on till later in the episode. But for the first time, it made me think about this. There's a moment in this episode where they have laid out all the pictures on the table for Will to look at. And it just made me think, what poor soul had to do that? Was that Bob who lined them all back up again or something?
Yeah.
Because
Because is he
That's
using...
quite the puzzle.
Well, yeah. Is he using, like, photographs of the paper, or have they brought the actual paper?
No, it's photographs of the paper. The paper's still very much up.
And some... So they had to line up their cameras perfectly.
Yes.
To get each shot. And then, yeah, some poor git had to... Oh, dear. I bet it was Bob.
It probably was, because who's going to do it better than Bob?
Exactly.
No one. But at this moment on the in the meeting room, though, is Joyce with Sam and the rest of the scientists, or doctors, whatever they're meant to be. And she's so frustrated with them because they haven't helped. And they're saying to her, oh, well, if you'd brought him in sooner. And she literally says, I have been bringing him in. And they obviously hadn't picked up anything.
No.
And she's so frustrated and just kind of screams, what is wrong with my boy?
And that's it. It's one of those situations where you're fully on Joyce's side, of course.
Yeah.
But at the same time, on the scientist's side, I can understand why they've struggled to find anything so far. Because if you think about it, if it's Henry in his head or the Mind Flayer or whatever, he's not being active yet.
No.
So, obviously, they've seen something's wrong. But they kind of describe it in... Well, they do describe it in the episode. The symptoms they've seen thus far have been akin to someone suffering PTSD.
Yes.
And then only in this episode do they then see a bit of extra brain activity going on. And then, I think they say an hour ago, when they decided to go ahead and blowtorch a piece of the vines right next to Will, do they see this absolute huge increase in brain activity from the mental link that they all share. The hive mind, that's what I was trying to think of. Hive mind.
Well, speaking of brain activity, because you've spoke about that, I'm now running through my notes to delete that section out.
Was that ahead? I thought that was like straight after.
No, that's a good few scenes ahead. I'm just
skipping through.
It's fine, it's fine. That is the noise as I scroll.
Yeah, that's it. Notes aren't on a phone or something. She's actually reading them from like a two-reel paper scroll.
It does feel like that sometimes. I thought it would be easier this time to do the notes on the laptop, but then that meant I ended up writing a heck of a lot more than I would have. When I get to that bit, I'll just I'll either repeat myself or I'll just delete it then.
Yeah, just delete it then. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
But now you've got to reel in your scroll even more to get back to where we actually are again.
Yeah. Well, where we are is a very funny scene. We find ourselves with Nancy, Jonathan and Murray. They are making copies of the tape and sending them to different newspapers. And they cheers with vodka.
Yep. To taking down the man.
Yeah, taking down the man. And Murray suggests that they stay. And you can already see that kind of tension between Jonathan and Nancy. And they're like, oh, no, we can't.
Yeah.
And Murray doesn't see the problem because he's just seeing a couple in front of him who are now insisting that they are not a couple.
Yeah, and he's fully calling them out for their BS.
Yeah, he gives them the talk. And by that, I don't mean the birds and the bees. But he's sick of hearing them saying that they're just friends. And I absolutely love that speech. Like, it always makes me laugh. And, you know, he just calls them out, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's just like, right, you're lying to me. You're lying to yourselves. Shut up. Get in bed. Deal with it.
He's like, you've got trust issues and you retreat. And they're like, no, we don't.
Exactly, that's it. They're both kept up by those thoughts.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's dead on the money, though. Like, you know, you can understand Jonathan having trust issues from his father, 100%. Yeah. And I think Nancy is a bit on the fence in terms of Steve, like he says. So
we like Steve.
But we don't love Steve. Excuse me, if you'd seen the audience, we all love Mama Steve. Thank you very much. But Yeah, he hits them. He hits the nail on the head with these two. He really does get it straight away.
It did make me think, though, that Nancy, especially, needs another Murray talk in season 5.
Yeah.
Because it got all over the place in season 4 between Steve and Jonathan. And I feel like she needs a good talking to from Murray in season 5 to be like, what the hell are you doing?
Murray's clearly in the wrong job.
He's
not an investigator.
No.
You know, he needs to be a couples therapist.
He does need... Oh my God, imagine that. Jesus Christ. he needs to be either a couples therapist or he needs like a love column.
Yeah, yeah.
Dear
no.
Murray. Yeah, he is. He's so funny. But yeah, I feel like he could talk to a lot of people about their relationships and how they deal with things, because he just wants to cut out the BS. But yes, if it's, you know, if it's Murray's words or if it was just the right time, Nancy and Jonathan do come together and very obviously make love.
Yeah, I think it's very, very obvious.
Yeah, and it comes with some of the best lines in the morning.
I was going to say, it's very obvious by his reaction to a certain line.
So, Jonathan,
how was the pullout?
And then, of course, that is followed by a brilliant moment as well, where the egg falls off Murray's spoon, which was a blooper.
It was a blooper, yeah, and that's it.
You can see the laughter. I mean...
Yeah, they are doing their Natalia best to keep it in.
Natalia is finding it harder to keep it in. Charlie does a bit better, but you can see it in his eyes as well.
Yeah, exactly, that's it. And kind of in Brett.
Yeah, definitely. The way he goes, oops.
Oops. But it's so in character.
It is so in character. And it kind of is in character for all of them because, you know, they might all nervously laugh at what's happened.
Nancy is a nervous laugher.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely is, yeah.
And, yeah, so it works perfectly. And I love kind of blooper scenes like that when they make it into shows. It's
yeah,
so funny.
I love it when bloopers just make it into the show like that and it's so in character because, you know, if I'd never... come on the internet and found that it was a blooper, I would have thought it was part of the script.
Yeah.
Because it just fits in so well.
Yeah.
It's, honestly, I well and truly think bloopers are sometimes the best scenes. And there's one that comes to mind, but I'm not going to talk about it because it's season 3.
Ooh.
And I'll just end up talking about it then as well. So I'm going to zip my mouth shut. But it's Malevin. That's all I'll say.
But do you know what? I can't even think about what that one is at the moment.
Do you want me to tell you now?
No, leave me in suspense. Because it's been so long since we watched season 3 and season 4, of course. So yeah, no, it'll be like watching it for the first time again.
Yes.
So do you know what? This episode has so many serious moments and so much comedy.
Yeah.
You feel like you're on a roller coaster.
Yeah, exactly. And it's another one of those moments where you're nearly making me talk about season 3.
Sorry.
So I was going to say, none of it is forced.
No.
Or it doesn't feel forced anyway.
It's all very naturally flowing.
Yeah.
Because like the next scene, for instance, like Erica has stolen Lucas's... what would you call them? I don't know the name.
Isn't it He-Man?
Let's go with He-Man. Let's say it's He-Man. That might not even be true.
I might be completely wrong, but I'm sure it's He-Man.
Let's go with that. Stolen his, like, figurine. And I love her. She's just got, like, in season 2, she's just like, whatever.
She does not care.
No. And, Lucas comes in and realises he's been missing calls from Dustin. He speaks to him and explains that Dar is a baby Demogorgon and that he's with Steve. And it both made us laugh, didn't it?
Yeah.
He's
more shocked that Steve's involved again than Dar being a baby Demogorgon. I think...
That both made us chuckle today. We're like, what?
I half wonder if Lucas already expected that Dar was potentially a Demogorgon because they kind of knew it was from the Upside Down.
He's like, you're with Steve Harrington?
So he's like, okay, yeah, it's a Demogorgon. That's old news. But you're with Steve Harrington?
Yeah.
What?
I know. Sorry, people. I've just noticed two spiders in our living room, which I'm not dealing very well with, to be honest with you, because they're my phobia.
Henry, is that you?
Henry, you will leave this house this moment.
Be gone, demon.
You are not welcome here.
The power of the party compels you.
We've already got a crazy toddler. We don't need you to.
And his name nearly was Henry.
But it's Harry. We've already got a H that rules this house.
Doesn't he just? I can hear Emmy in my head saying, no, I do. Anyway, be right back. I just found out Sian has never heard that sound before.
I've never heard that sound before, no.
I never even watched the Batman cartoons, but it's such an iconic sound.
I don't know what to say. I've never heard that sound.
I feel like that's one of the ones that Lewis would judge you for.
Yeah, well, Lewis is old. Lewis is our brother-in-law, by the way. Hi, Lewis. He's old and he's got a big brain.
Yeah, well, there are some things that are just pop culture and everyone knows it.
Listen, I have given you two children.
Yes.
You're not allowed to diss me.
Yes.
So you will ignore the fact that I've clearly missed a bit of pop culture that I'm sure our younger viewers, like myself, also don't know. And we shall continue with the chapter.
Fine.
Deal?
Diolch.
Diolch? A little bit more Welsh for you there, my friend. Although that didn't actually fit the situation.
But still. I know, but it sounded similar to deal, so deal with it.
Oh, charming. Right. So, back to the chapter. And I wanted to be like all enthusiastic, but it's another dark moment, people. It's,
oh dear.
It's Sam Owens. He's showing Hopper how the, I'm trying to think what to call it really, because I was going to say the gate, but
it is from the gate.
I know it is the gate, but
well, in that case, I guess the vines from the gate.
Yeah, like how it is spread. He's saying, you know, like how it's grown, and he shows him the microorganisms have adapted, spread, growing like cancer.
I suppose, kind of in their own words, how the parasite has grown.
Yeah, and it's scary, really, how smart it is, and you know, it's remained undetected at first because they've only seen the top of it, but it's been going down.
Well,
it's
that's
been,
it. They were fully confident that their burning was doing enough. They didn't think any of it made it out of the lab, but as they find out, it's gone down and it has spread under the ground.
Yeah, and do you know what's crazy? I can't count the amount of times I've watched like this season, but seeing that kind of camera pan down and seeing all of it, I kind of felt like, my God, Elle is so powerful.
Oh,
to shut that.
Honestly, she is an absolute powerhouse. Like, you can't overstate how powerful she is. And I think, yeah, the closure of the gate is one of the first moments that really shows that.
Definitely.
Like, you know, we see little, not little, but we see hints towards how powerful she must be, you know, starting with the van flip.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, being able to find people in her head. And then next episode when she moves that train.
Yeah, and you know, it just kind of almost daunted me as to what Elle has to face, you know? Even though I know it and I've seen it, just, I don't know, there was something about watching it this time and just seeing how vast it is That was like, wow, our girl is so powerful.
She really is. And it's insane to think that that gate, that big, started from the one that she accidentally cracked open in the bath.
I know.
Like, I know she didn't spread it that big. Obviously, that's the work of Henry.
But yeah.
Yeah, the fact that she's the one who created that gate in the first place.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, when she gets back to it, it's just a tiny bit bigger.
Just a tad.
Like, if you blink, you won't notice, but it's just a tiny bit bigger.
And while Hopper is looking at all of this, Joyce is talking with Bob, who she has just filled in about everything, really. And, you know, explained that they've had to sign all the papers and all that stuff, and they couldn't talk about it. And again, it's just another moment to love Bob and to see how perfect he was for Joyce.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he could have run away.
He could have been like, right, screw this, I ain't getting involved.
Yeah, I'm not involved in this. He could have
just skedaddled right out of there. But no, he's just like, oh God, I can't believe you of all people would have had to deal with this.
Yeah, and it just shows the man that he is. And in this moment as well, Will wakes up and, you know, they're all surrounding him around the bed and he doesn't recognise Bob. And Joyce has obviously got together with Bob in the last year. So, you know, I would say from this moment on is Henry.
Yeah, that's it. It's not Will anymore, except for a few moments that he breaks through.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said it right, Will is pretty much gone mentally at this point.
Yeah.
Like, he's not in control anymore.
He at the moment is a puppet with strings that can only move or talk if his puppet master allows.
Yeah.
Unless his puppet master is distracted. That's my opinion.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Or if it's something strong enough to break through.
It does make me wonder as well. I can't think of whether this is explored or not, but for future seasons, I can't remember if Will remembers what he is kind of forgetting, what's blurring.
How do you mean, sorry?
Because it's like he's got like a short-term memory loss.
Right, yeah.
Of like the last year. And I'm wondering if once, you know, it's out of him, will he remember everything? Does he remember everything of this last year?
Well,
because I know he does obviously remember Bob because he does the drawing of Bob Newby Superhero.
That's what I was just going to use to say.
So he does remember Bob. But I was just thinking, yeah, I wonder if his full memory came back or if it was tainted. You know, like how, like VHSs and stuff can get like a mould on them and stuff. You know, I wonder if like that it's tainted.
Oh, I wonder if Will himself isn't forgetting anything. And it's just like you said. You said it when we were watching. It's like Henry is having to dig through the archives of Will's head.
Yeah.
To shift through his memories.
Yeah.
I wonder
if he can do it like quick enough.
Yeah, I wonder if he just can't quite get to this year for some reason.
Well, it could be like, I'm going to use inside out as a kind of, I don't know, way of explaining this. But yeah. You know how Inside Out, there's the core memories, like they stay there, like
they keep them in the control room for a bit.
Like vital, like people like Mike and Joyce, you know, the people that truly mean everything and have been there for a very, very long time. They are part of the core memories. They're part of who makes Will who he is. But like, no offense to Bob, but Bob doesn't make Will who he is or anything like that.
Yeah.
He's very much short-term memory kind of thing at the moment, at least. And so, yeah, if Henry is having to quickly go through the stuff in Will's head to understand who's who, it's going to be easier to find a Mike and a Joyce than it is to find a Bob, because he isn't as significant.
Yeah, not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going similar when you mentioned Inside Out, because that's a really good way of saying it. And the way I was going to say it is obviously, like, in Inside Out, it's as if they do it every day. Like, you know, when Riley's going to sleep, they shift any important memories off to the archives. I suppose you could imagine it as if they only do that, like, say, once a year or something.
Yeah.
And they just haven't shifted anything containing Bob out of the control room and off to the archives.
Yeah.
And that's all that Henry has access to is the archives. Yeah. And obviously there's going to be many of his own mother.
Yeah.
Going to be many of Mike.
Yeah.
So, but then, yeah, if none of this year has been shifted over there, then there's none of Bob over there yet.
And like we said, Noah really shines in these scenes. Like, I feel like, you know, he's got these really dark eyes, and it's the way that his eyes can look almost dead, and yet when he's looking at Sam or Bob or even Mike, you know, to name them, he's really analysing everyone.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, you can tell this isn't Will anymore through his eyes, because, like you say, Noah does such an amazing job this season.
Yeah.
Like, I say he truly stands out, and this is his season, in my opinion, in many ways. But, yeah, like you say, those eyes can do a lot of talking.
Yeah, they can.
And exactly like you say, it's like they are dead to the point that you can tell this isn't Will. But then, yeah, when he's having to try and identify someone, you can see those eyes just, like you say, peering into their soul nearly.
Yeah.
Like,
piercing
really
through, really formidable.
Yeah, really, like, just scanning over that person, being like, and trying to, it's as if he's staring at them so that there's a picture of them in his head, and then, like you say, in the Inside Out terms, Henry's just digging through all these memory orbs. That one? No. That one? No. Throwing it behind him.
Yeah.
And he goes, ah, there you are.
That's Mike. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. So it is as if he has to just stare at him for a bit before eventually that memory comes forward.
Yeah. Again, it makes me nervous because obviously Vecna knows about Mike even from this stage, before he knows he's got a connection with Elle.
I suppose you're right, yeah. Obviously doesn't know he's linked to Elle at this point.
No.
Well, unless, but no, because that would be too recent. If he's not able to remember Bob, I doubt he has any memories of Will talking to Mike about Elle.
Yeah.
So, maybe not. But, yeah, Mike is so in danger.
I know, and it makes me so nervous. I can't cope with it. But, speaking of danger, like you had said earlier, this is also the moment where Sam does put two and two together that what may be happening to Will might be happening to the Vines, about this kind of, you know, the host, and that's when, yeah, he pulls out the vine,
yeah,
and burns it.
That's it. Yeah, I like how it's, I can't remember exactly why he does that, but
he's trying to see if they're linked.
Yeah, I know he's trying to, he's testing the theory here, but I can't remember what exactly triggers that thought in his head.
Mm.
I can't remember if it's very obvious or if it's just, he's thinking about these things, he's seeing all this happen, and then he's feeling burning and all that. I wonder if,
he wants to know if they're connected. He wants
to
know
that's what
about
I mean.
That hive mind.
I know, and this is his way of testing the theory, which is, you know, pretty much the only way you can test the theory.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think of what popped that into his head, but I can't remember really.
It could be because of, obviously, he knows that they were burning the tunnels.
Yeah.
And Will just, and at the same time, Will has that fit and screaming and describes it as burning everywhere, so.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder if maybe it was when they stopped burning, when he knows when they stopped burning, Will suddenly doesn't feel that anymore, potentially.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that. But either way, yeah, then they're burning that and he just,
it tests his theory right.
It does indeed prove his theory very correct. I do wonder why they let it burn that much, though.
Yeah.
It's like, as soon as he could feel a bit of a tickle, like he said, when the flame was nowhere near it, that should be enough.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, when he gets a little closer and he's like, okay, now it's starting to hurt, makes you wonder why he let the guy just literally burn the thing and have Will screaming,
I mean,
until Hopper just says to cut it out.
I mean, I suppose maybe he's seeing if almost what they end up doing. Like, I wonder if he's thinking, if we burn it enough, could it get it to leave well? Because it's too uncomfortable.
Well, that conversation that I mentioned really sort of put Sam in the correct position in my head. You know, the one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
That happens after this, doesn't it? Because...
That happens when they've looked at the scans of his head and they can see in the brain that something's basically overtaking
but the
it.
The scan of his brain is after this burn.
Yes, it is, yeah.
So, okay, yeah. So, I think at this point, maybe, he knows they obviously need to burn to control,
mm-hmm.
but he's learned that they're linked.
Yeah.
And so he needs to know how linked they are.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why he lets this guy not only just slightly scorch the thing, but properly like point the flame at it to actually burn the thing and see what it does to Will's vitals, because he's obviously on a heart monitor and all that. So he's seeing how Will's body reacts to this. Because later on then he's saying we can't burn because it's going to kill the kid.
That's it. And one of the other scientists is like, well, quite frankly, if it kills him, it kills him.
Yeah, and it's Sam's reaction to that that, like I say, that moment, the way Sam reacts to that, saying, I can't remember exactly right,
he says, you did not just say that to me. And he points at him.
Yeah, exactly. That moment there puts Sam on our side in my head.
Definitely.
Like, up until this point... A bit like how when Paul Reiser was doing it, he didn't want to know if Sam was good or bad. That line there very much set him on the good side in my head. As soon as he says that, I'm like, right, okay, you're a good guy.
Absolutely, and it kind of... I'm not saying that scientists are bad people or anything like that.
But they're in Hawkins' lab.
But it kind of... I just mean in general. But it kind of distinguished Sam as a doctor rather than as a scientist in my eyes. Because a doctor wants to save people. Like, you know, they're caring people. It's about finding any way of making that person live. And I'm not saying scientists don't want to save people. Of course they do. You know, they make vaccinations and everything. But I think they're a little bit more methodical, you know. They're thinking of the greater good about, you know, the masses, while the doctors want to save every single person.
Yeah, I suppose you could say the scientists are like, listen, it's just one kid. We're saving the world here by burning the vines and all that. They're like, you know, if one kid dies, boo-hoo.
Yeah.
But like you say, that doctor...
He's like, no, we've got to find
like,
a way.
How dare you say that?
Yeah.
You know, this not only is one person important, but this is a kid. How dare you... potentially sacrifice this one kid.
Exactly. So you know, you're right. This is a big moment where we do know that Sam is a good guy.
Yeah, this is the moment, if you ask me. This is that line right there.
Yeah.
Is what sets it.
And that's it. But Sam is risking a lot even by saying, like, even arguing with them, because it's one against, I think it's like, what, six maybe? More of
it's
them.
It's a full boardroom, basically.
Yeah. But speaking about risks, we also have Lucas risking a lot by going to the Hargrove's house.
Yeah.
And
I like how you've capitalised a lot.
Yeah. because he's got proof for Max now. Now that he's spoken to Dustin and he knows what's going on with Dart, he's like, I'm taking this opportunity to get Max involved.
It's a good opportunity, but it's like I say...
It's also a bit of a suicide mission.
He hasn't actually had a run-in with Billy yet.
No, he hasn't.
So I guess he doesn't maybe know yet that there's a raging racist in that house.
Yeah.
That will pretty much break his neck if he goes anywhere near the door.
Honestly, he's so lucky because he misses Billy by seconds.
Literal seconds. And it's like I said, like, what would he have done if Billy was the one to answer that door? I think that would be the moment that Lucas dies right there.
Oh, I think he would have... I don't think he would have killed him, but I do think he would have beat him up and threatened him.
Well, I think Lucas would be dying in hospital.
Oh, honestly. Billy is so dangerous, isn't he? And very much so in this season.
Yeah.
He's just so, like, foreboding. Like, the way he's walking towards the door, you're like, oh my God, Max, oh my God.
Max describes him really well atop the bus later on. Just says he's always angry.
Yeah.
And I think that is it in a nutshell. He's always angry. Can't take it out on his mother, so he takes it out on her. But, being a bit of a racist, he's going to take it out on any other person he can.
Yeah. And, yeah, so Lucas is very lucky in that scene that he gets away with Max. And like she says to him, this better be good. This because she knows good. She knows she's in for it when he realises she's gone.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, she's not exactly going to run off with Mormons, is she?
No.
So, yeah, I think, you know, Billy, as racist and all that as he is, he's not stupid. Like, he's going to put two and two together that she was at the door. She very much didn't want him to look through the door.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she makes up Mormons on the spot. I don't think he believes her.
No, he doesn't. And then suddenly,
yeah, like you say, it's not going to take him long to realise she's left the house.
No.
So I think he would instantly put two and two together. That must be this Lucas kid that she's now talking to.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, this is why Lucas is just so lucky.
He really is.
And like, while that's all happening, we get another moment of Steve and Dustin, where they are walking along the old train track, and Steve is giving Dustin some advice, which I'm not entirely sure I agree with, which is acting like you don't care to someone that you actually really do care about.
It's like I say, how well has that worked out for you, Steve?
Exactly. That's it. We love you, Steve, but you're not probably the best person to get the advice from about loving long, committed relationships and stuff.
Exactly. He's not really, it doesn't seem like he's the kind of person for long relationship, does he?
No. And although I'm sure he wants to, he does want to commit with Nancy. He's just really not good at this. If anything, Dustin should give him advice.
Yeah. I think season two is the turning point in that, though. Like, yeah. Season one, Steve, he was just after flings.
Yeah, definitely. But I think he did like that Nancy was different. No matter what he was like in season one, he definitely was attracted by the fact that Nancy was different to any of the other girls he had been with before.
Yeah, I think Nancy changed him, and then obviously everything that happened changed him. I think he did really grow up.
But yeah,
to season two.
But advice like acting like you don't care, that is literally, like, I remember my first crush in primary school. So I would have been about maybe 9, maybe 8 even. And there was this boy that I crushed on, and I used to watch the Nickelodeon show Hey Arnold, where there's this girl, Helga, I think, who fancies Arnold, and she's so nasty to him because she's so afraid that he's going to find out that she likes him.
Right.
And I wasn't a bully or anything like that, but I never gave this boy the time of day because I genuinely had a crush on him, and I was like, I don't want him to find out. And then when I realised, actually, if you're just nice to them. So I just started being nice to him, and then he started crushing on me as well.
Well, there we go.
So, Steve, don't give that advice.
No.
It's very primary school. I mean, I don't know how old kids are in middle school. It's like middle school-y, kind of kindergarten-y. It's, no.
No, exactly. And I say, obviously, they are in middle school here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Steve, there's a reason you're still single, mate.
If he is single. We know it's still debated, though, if they broke up or not. So, yeah. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure. But there is one thing he is right about, though, and that's the electricity.
Yeah, he nails
He's
that.
Right about connection, being able to see that in a partnership. And I suppose that is what Murray is seeing in Nancy and Jonathan, a kind of connection between them and electricity, the chemistry, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
We see it in season one, Mike and Elle.
You were God, like, the second they lay eyes on each other.
There's just a look.
In that rain, yeah.
And you know, I don't mean that in like a sexual way when I say the electricity.
That's it, because obviously Steve calls it that, but yeah, he obviously does.
But I'm talking about that kind of really deep connection. Like, for me, the scene that pops into my head is Mike and Elle in the bathroom when he's helping her, like, get the mud off her face. The nearly kiss
that Dustin interrupts.
Yeah, which is one of our favourite scenes. And
still
the,
pretty?
The look they give each other. So much is said in that look, and it's just that connection that pulls you in.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, literally, in this case, pulls you in.
Yeah.
And like I say, it's a nearly kiss, because if Dustin didn't come and interrupt, I think that would have been their first kiss right there.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so he is right about electricity, 100%.
Absolutely.
And he also tells Dustin what he uses on his hair, the Farrah Fawcett hairspray, so... That's how Steve gets his signature look.
You didn't get the memo. He said you're not allowed to tell anyone.
Oh, Dan. Everyone, it's Farrah Fawcett hairspray.
Your rear end is grass.
Oh, dear.
I couldn't say the real word. It's that. I know it's a donkey, but... can't really say that word here, so...
Oh, I'm sure we can say that one, can't we?
I don't know. Well, you don't think I can say git.
I really don't like git. We've talked about this last week. I think it was last week.
Yeah, I think. Maybe.
Only because where I come from, that...
Oh, listen, it's a... I wouldn't say a slur.
Mm.
But it is a word used for an insult. Like, you know, as if you're calling someone a stupid git.
Yeah.
But it's not an actual swear word. So...
And I don't think the other word for butt is that bad.
All right, then. Well, according to Steve, your ass is grass.
Yeah, I think ass is okay, because we could say arse, but, okay. And they'd all be fine. So...
Right, well, okay. According to Steve, your ass is grass, because you leaked his secret.
Sorry. Not sorry.
Batman's coming for you.
I was just looking at my notes, people, to make sure I knew where I was next. Because, as I said, my shorthand didn't go so shorthand on the laptop. I was going to call it a sweet scene, but it's kind of sad. It's Hopper in the car, leaving the message. And
oh, yeah.
You picked up, actually, that he just gives up on the Morse code.
Yeah, he's still trying to be secretive with the Morse code. You know, he's trying to leave a message for Elle, obviously. And then I think you see it in his eyes. He just sort of gives up. He's like, oh, screw this.
Yeah, the lab's busy enough as it is.
The lab's busy enough. You know, we're literally dealing with upside down shenanigans here. So screw it. If they're still listening out, then they're not going to pick where we are. That's it. He doesn't have to worry about them finding out where she is by sending a signal.
No.
You know, if they can trace a radio signal, they're going to trace it back to his car.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, if anything, it is safe where he is right now to start talking. He obviously doesn't mention Elle by name or anything. But if they are listening, they're going to be like, who the hell's he talking to, as if he's got a kid? But either way... but yeah, like you say, he's trying to be secretive, but it's that moment of desperation, because he's just... While we were listening to him, what went through my head is, I wonder if in this moment he regrets having her locked up, because he says he doesn't want to lose her, you know, he just wants to keep her safe, and I wonder if in this moment he's like, I've kept you locked up and all this just for then... for it all to come back.
Yeah,
you know,
it was coming back anyway.
Yeah, you had to deal with it back then, and then I kept you locked up. I've not let you see your friends or Mike or anyone, and now suddenly it's all back, and I'm just going to have to, it's as if I'm using you now, because we're clearly going to need you to fix this. So it's as if, oh yeah, I've kept you locked up, but you're coming out to fix this.
And kind of along the same lines, what it made me think of was, obviously, you know, he's had a close call with death, which you know, if you ever have those kind of situations, it makes you want to deal with things that are not dealt with, you know. So he tells her he's sorry. He realises what he's done and how he's acted. But it also made me think about the amount of time he's had to spend in the lab since coming out of those vines. It's not a comfortable environment. It's not a nice place to be. And it probably kind of brought it home to him that literally she spent her entire life there. She was trapped there. He probably feels trapped there right now. And he's realising that I'm also trapping her.
Yeah.
I'm also keeping her trapped. So very much like what you'd said, you know, he's like, I'm so sorry. Like, I've kept you trapped all for nothing because it's just been growing anyway. And
yeah,
I'm sorry.
I suppose, yeah, he kind of realises this place has had her trapped for 12 years.
Yeah.
And now he's just added a year to her trapped life just somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, a much better living condition, sure, but still trapped.
But that's it, like he says, like, he doesn't want her to get hurt ever. He wants her to be safe. And, you know, he wants her to eat proper food and all that kind of stuff. And it is, it's just really sweet. And I'm really glad, spoiler obviously, but I'm glad that Elle does get to hear that in the end of the next episode.
Controversial episode.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to talk about that episode. But yeah, I'm really glad she does actually get to hear that because I think it's important because he is saying sorry to her. It's what she does need to hear from him.
Exactly.
A bit long overdue, but yeah, it's what she deserves. And then we go back to Justin and Steve, and they get joined by Lucas and Max. And Steve is like, oh, that's the girl then. You can tell immediately
exactly.
from Justin's reaction.
At first, he's just like, who's that? And then Dustin's just completely silent.
Yeah.
So Steve looks over to him, and Dustin is just staring.
Yeah, he gives
Dustin's
it away who
gone.
That is.
Like, he's fully gone, and Steve just looks at him like, oh.
What I loved about this scene, though, is Lucas and Dustin kind of have it out. You know, they have this conversation because Lucas is technically broke the code by telling Max about
he's literally broken an NDA.
Yeah, about the upside down and all this kind of stuff. But what I love about it is I think it shows growth in Lucas from season one because they have a healthy conversation and they get their differences out of the way relatively quickly.
Yeah.
While in season one, Mike and Lucas don't really have a healthy discussion. It ends up in a big argument because they haven't expressed how they felt or kind of apologised for what they've done. But Lucas and Justin have a really good talk and Lucas explains why he's told Max and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, to the point where Justin kind of jokes anyway that Lucas probably wasn't telling it right and that's why Max didn't believe
him. Yeah, because Lucas says, you know, she didn't believe me anyway.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think, the thing is, I think Dustin, in the maturity and, like, all that,
he's always
been
good.
The bigger person.
Yeah, he's always been good at these conversations.
Because, like,
you
know, he was trying to fix Mike and Lucas in season one. He was the voice of reason saying, you know, you need to fix this. You need to shake and get on with it. Got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
But, I think because of that, yeah, like you say, he then just jokes about it.
Mm.
You know, he's like, okay, whatever. It's happened.
Yeah.
As well as that, he's obviously interested in Max. I suppose he's a bit on the lines of, well, you've just done the dirty work for me. Because, you know, if I got with her, we'd eventually have to tell her anyway. So you've just done it for me. Thank you.
Yeah. But, yeah, I just thought, like, it was a healthy conversation. Compared to, like, season one, Lucas, like I say, Dustin was always amazing at having these kind of conversations and being open and honest. But Lucas wasn't. You know, he'd rather make, like, a snarky comment than actually talk about how he was feeling.
Mike and Lucas were very defensive.
Yes. So I just thought, yeah, that it showed a lot of growth. So while all of this is happening, Nancy and Jonathan have finally got back to Hawkins and they've arrived at the buyer's house to a disturbing scene. Can you imagine being away and then walking into your house and there is literally, well, it's overwhelmed by drawings.
I know.
Pretty disturbing drawings.
I know, I was thinking that as well. I was like, you couldn't imagine.
No.
Especially being Jonathan, who obviously was literally dead centre with Will missing.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they get back into the house and instead of Christmas lights everywhere,
yeah,
it's drawings just all over the place.
I mean, it's no wonder that Jonathan does relatively quickly put two and two together,
yeah,
and come up with the lab. Because, I mean, I'm assuming Jonathan knows that Will goes to the lab on a regular basis. He must do.
I don't understand why he wouldn't.
Yeah, so he must know that he goes to the lab on a regular basis. And I kind of thought, though, that it was a bit of a silly mistake. The lab leave, I don't know what the official word of it would be, but some sort of cartridge out of the camera that they've used.
Yeah, I think it's a film cartridge that they leave there.
And Jonathan immediately knows that that does not belong to him. That's not the kind of ones he uses. I just thought, in everything they did, like with Will's body and everything, that's quite ridiculous.
They've clearly hired some utter clowns lately, haven't they?
Either utter clowns or they've almost left it as breadcrumbs for Jonathan to come to the lab without them having to say officially.
Maybe.
Like, for him to put two and two together and make his way in or something. I'm not sure, but without having to literally leave a note on the fridge like, can you come to Hawkins' lab, please?
Yeah, exactly.
Your brother's losing it.
Your brother's gone, mate. He's, like, possessed or something.
Yeah. it is a good scene. I mean, they always have something happening in that house,
house. You cannot blame the actual owners for selling it or whatever they did to get him out.
Yeah.
Because obviously that's the reason they move in season three. The actual homeowners in real life have moved or something like that. Or they just said no more.
Yeah, no, well, it was up for, I think it was up for sale. Oh, it wasn't up for sale when I saw the house, but
no,
it was.
No, but it did have signs saying, if you get anywhere near me, I will pop your head.
Pretty much, yeah. We respected the signs. We didn't get close at all. You could barely see the property. But, fair enough. Like, each to their own. Like, they don't want people on their property. Like, that's fine.
That's fair, you know.
I can't imagine. I wouldn't be comfortable with that kind of thing if we lived in a famous house.
Yeah. No, exactly. You wouldn't want that at all.
It'd freak me out, it would. So, yeah, that's fine, you know. But, yeah, they did sell it, and I'm not sure if the new owners allowed filming. So, yeah, that was definitely why they did move.
Yeah. Well, I'd say I don't know if they allowed filming or if it was just during filming and they were moving and so they just couldn't.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose we'll find out in season five if they end up back there or not.
That's it. It would be nice if they did.
But if it is a happy ending, then Joyce and Hopper are going to need a bigger house anyway.
Yes, they are. That cabin ain't going to contain them.
No, it's not. So that's it. After all those kind of scenes, it's all getting very, very serious again. So I literally wrote it as Will is in his Henry moment. And he says that there's a section of the tunnels he's not meant to see. So, of course, the soldiers are going to rush there. And they're getting prepared. And while they're getting prepared, Lucas is on the roof of the bus.
Yep.
With his binoculars. And him and Max have a really good talk. Like, you touched on it before about what Max was saying about Billy. But it's more than that, isn't there? Like, Lucas asks her why they'd left California and, you know, she says that her dad's there and, you know...
Like they just wanted to get her away from her dad. Which the book, What Runaway Max, kind of touches on as well.
Yeah, it does.
It's as if they moved... She's implying that it's because of her dad anyway. This talk, like, it's the first time we see Max open up.
Yeah, it is.
Like, she very clearly doesn't like talking about her feelings or anything like that. But, I mean, and she says it herself, she doesn't know why she's opening up here.
Yeah, and it is interesting why she is, because Lucas doesn't really instigate it.
No,
he just asks if she misses California.
I think it's like you say, there's that connection.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't call it electricity here, because it's not that kind of moment. But
I think it's a trust.
It's a trust. You just get that feeling with that certain someone.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Max is getting here with Lucas.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, she can trust him to let all this out. And, you know, obviously, she starts crying about it. It is a moment of just letting it out. It's and venting.
It's a moment of vulnerability that we needed to see in Max.
Exactly. To start, you know, to she's understand always her. She has always got her walls up.
Yeah.
And very understandably so.
Yeah.
And this moment, she needs to let them down for a bit. She needs to let it out. And Lucas is the one that lets that happen. And I've always thought of this scene as like the proper start of Lumax as yeah, a couple.
Definitely. And I'm sorry, because I'm going to talk about season three, but only briefly. This scene almost saddens me for what comes in season three of their relationship, because this seems like a huge step forward. Like, Lucas is very sensitive back. Like, maybe a lot of people at their kind of age wouldn't know how to kind of handle what Max is saying. But Lucas is really gentle with her and you know, tells her that she's nothing like Billy and that she's smart and she's kind and all this kind of stuff.
And totally tubular.
Totally tubular. But in season three, I'm not saying he's insensitive, but it's like he doesn't know how to suddenly be a boyfriend.
Yeah, like, it's
the
like
most
just
obvious
suddenly
things that you do, you know, like he drinks all the water and all that just kind yeah of like random things that is so unlike his character.
I've said before and I'll say it again, they are all, everyone is so out of character in season three.
Yeah,
it's like the entire show just forgot everything that happens in season one and two, and it's just like, we're drunk on money, we're just gonna make yeah things up on the spot now.
I mean, fortunately, I would say Lucas is back to Lucas in season four.
Yes.
I really think he is.
If anything, it's the other way around. Max forgets that she can open up to Lucas.
Yeah. Obviously not for the whole of season four, because she does eventually. But
yeah.
But yeah. So I just think it's like a really healthy conversation on that bus. But obviously it gets broken because everything's, you know, accumulating, everything's happening at this moment, and Steve goes out to meet, well, he thinks Dart.
He's going out to meet Dart, and it is Dart we see first. I'm sure you can see that yellow stripe on his back.
Yeah, you can.
But then, yeah, this is the moment they reveal more Demodogs have made their way up.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember how I felt. I think I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I think I thought Steve was going to get it, to be honest.
Yeah, I thought he was at least getting a chomp somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Because it is, it's a quite a shocking big reveal, because so far we have only ever seen Dart, and then suddenly there's more.
Yeah, exactly. It's another moment where he's trying to ignore Lucas shouting at him, but it's like, no, 3 o'clock, mate, you're about to get chomped.
I'd be terrible with that kind of talk though. Someone's like, Sean, 3 o'clock, at 3 o'clock, be like, what, where? I'd be there using my big hand and my little hand going, 3 o'clock, right, where about my look?
It's always
I'd have been eaten by the time I'd even done
whichever that way you're facing. 12 is always in front of you.
I know, so, but by the time I'd done my clock, My hand on the free would have been eaten off by a Demogorgon.
So you can't quickly imagine where 3, 6, or 9 are.
I suppose I can, but if someone was screaming at me, 3 o'clock, 3 o'clock, I'd be like, what? I'd just be panicking. I would not be good in this kind of situation, but my CV won't say that. But yeah, so we have this moment with the Demodogs, and you know, at some point, I think Max believes them, but I think she, until the moment where that Demodog goes to the kind of the ceiling opening and I was going to say growls at her, so I don't think it screeches at her. Before that moment, she says, like, you know, you're sure they're rabid or something like that. I think she's thinking, oh, they think they are, the boys think it's some sort of creature, but really it's just a rabid dog, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, of course, dangerous, but not out of this world.
I suppose, yeah, she's not had a clear view of the face yet, has she?
Yeah.
And then, obviously, once it's in her face,
she screams.
Yes.
And that's it. Like, there's also that moment where she's holding hands with Luca. She's obviously scared.
You would be, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Obviously, it's the first moment seeing this creature from sort of wherever it's from.
Yeah, and that's obviously another Lumax moment, because she clearly thinks they are probably about to die, and she grabs his hand.
Yeah.
You know, and that says a lot as well. But they go away. They've heard something. They've sensed something.
Well, they've been summoned.
Yeah. They look up and they go off. And like Steve says...
And we know where they're going.
Yeah, we know where they're going. Oh, we do. And Steve's like, no, they're going somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. I can't remember what was... Does someone say that they scared them off?
I think Dustin's like, oh, you know, Steve, you scared them off or something like that.
It's like, mate, as if.
Yeah.
As if. And yeah, Steve isn't stupid. He's like, no, they've been, you know, that's going somewhere.
Yeah.
He knows they've been summoned.
And that's it. And as they're going through the tunnels, like, Will kind of, I personally think he does break free for a moment, because just that deadpan expression is gone, and that face is kind of back to how it was when he told Joyce, you know, he could feel it everywhere, and it was...
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, Henry's not going to be crying about what's happening here.
No, he's not. Henry, if anything, he'd be laughing or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But Henry's clearly a bit preoccupied with the attack.
Yeah. Do you know what? It shows Will gets through emotion.
Yeah.
Because in this moment, obviously, he's crying about the fact Will knows that he has just sentenced these guys to their deaths.
Yeah.
A bloody gruesome death as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Will knows that full well. Will knows he's about to watch in his head, because he's linked. Will is linked to those dogs. He's going to see all this happening.
Do you know what? That's a good point that I've never thought about, yeah.
You know, technically, in the back of Will's mind, he's doing this right now. He's the one chewing them all up.
Yeah.
But, and so obviously that's making Will himself emotional about that, and that emotion lets him break through the mind control for a bit. And I'm only mentioning that because late in the last episode, when he's Morse coding out close gate, they are getting to him through his emotions.
Yeah.
You know, they're going back on emotional memories and stuff like that, and that's what gives him control over that one finger.
Yeah.
When he's
Which is crazy, if you can imagine him having had like an MRI scan, you could imagine like a black shadow over his entire body except for like the tips of his fingers.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like he was so close to getting the whole of him kind of thing.
He pretty much was gone, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he's crying and he's saying to Joyce he's sorry, and that he tried to warn them, they hurt him, they upset him. And of course, Mike, being the genius that he is, realises the spy is spying back.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And Mike immediately understands that this is a trap. And he's legging it, trying to get to them. And, you know, you're right. It's too late at this point.
Yeah, but I was going to say, that's Will's literal words. It's too late.
Yeah, but it's like, it's another case of the security guards are just like, you're just a kid, we don't need to listen to you.
Yeah.
You know, he's shouting, I need to warn him, it's a trap. It's like, this kid's dealt with it before. Surely these guys know that Mike's dealt with it before. You'd think they'd pay a little more respect to this kid shouting, it's a trap, we need to warn them. But instead they're just like, no, you're not going in, stupid kid.
Yeah.
And yeah, like we say, it's too late anyway, he's not saving them. But you'd think they would pay a little more respect to a kid who's dealt with this before.
Maybe, but it's one of those things as well, though, because I'd be amazed if those... I mean, I know they obviously went in armed, but those soldiers weren't expecting anything, because Willis told them that there's a part of this tunnel that they don't want him to see, and...
They haven't seen Demodogs yet.
No, I know they haven't seen Demodogs yet, but... You'd think there would be a threat, you know, in there.
Well, that's it. They're going in armed, and obviously the last words we hear from one of them is, stay frosty, guys. So they're expecting something,
yeah.
Clearly. You know, the whole stay frosty literally means watch your back, keep an eye out, you know, be ready.
Yeah. Maybe they're expecting, like, one Demogorgon. Because they...
Maybe.
They
I imagine
would, they wouldn't have been up against the Demogorgon in season one, but they would have heard about it.
Yeah, I imagine in their signing of documents and vowing to an NDA and all of that, I imagine they've had a description of what the Demogorgon was.
Although, I'm saying that, right? But did anyone actually... I know Brenna did, ironically, but did anyone actually survive the Demogorgon attack in the school? From the lab side?
Not in the school, no.
So I suppose there's no one except for, say, Will, to actually describe the Demogorgon.
There's Nancy, Steve, Jonathan.
I suppose on that side Joyce. Of things, yeah. But I mean, from like the lab side of things.
Yeah,
but...
from the lab, they haven't got anyone official, shall we say. Mm. But they've got all of the people who have signed these documents, signed these agreements and all that. They've got all of them saying the same thing.
Okay, well, say then Hopper did describe a Demogorgon. Yeah, maybe they're expecting the one Demogorgon. Because they don't know that El destroyed it. So yeah, maybe that's what they were expecting. One against all how many of them there was. But of course, they're outnumbered.
Yeah.
By Demodogs.
Exactly. Much smaller, but... just quantity over quality, yeah.
Yeah, just as vicious. Yeah, so it is, it's such an exciting episode. So action-packed from the beginning. So many important scenes. So many funny scenes as well, though.
Yeah.
Which absolutely. I love. I love that kind of combination. And I would say it's leading to the next scene, but... The next chapter. But
this is it, obviously. It doesn't end there because later on it ends with one of the Demodogs climbing up. I can't remember if we have any more scenes before that. But, you know, they're behind a protective glass, one of the Demodogs, you just see one of its claws get up out of the hole sort of thing, and that's how the episode ends, as they're coming. No, that's right, Will says, you know, You need to run.
You need to leave.
You need to leave. They're coming. And so, yeah. I know you're about to look up what the episode's called. I'm pretty sure it's The Lost Sister. But that's just off my head. I might be completely wrong. But as you were just implying, yeah, no, this episode does not lead up to the next one. And this is why episode 7 is so controversial. Because it's all starting. Everything's about to... well, yeah, it's all going down, and then suddenly we're in California. Like, what?
No, we're not in California.
Chicago?
We are in, I think it is Chicago, yeah.
Of course, yeah, California season 4.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're in Chicago.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, like I say, it's so hard, really, because... where could they have put this episode? It's such a different episode.
Yeah.
And they were taking a risk with it. I, as you well know by now, 100% agree that this episode is needed. It's such an important episode.
Yeah, we need Elle's powers to grow. We need her, exactly.
She needs to learn who she is. But it's just one... if it wasn't episode 7, where else would you put it?
Yeah.
Like, it couldn't really go anywhere else. So, yeah, I get what people are saying about the fact that it takes you out of the action. You know, you've just had the Demodog reach the surface where everyone is at the lab, and then suddenly we're having to sit through this episode before we get back to the action. I get that.
Yeah.
But there was nowhere else they could put it.
No. And I like Elle going on a little adventure.
Absolutely. That's it. You know, I find it, you know, I agree in terms of that episode placement issue, but there was nowhere else for it to go, and it's an important episode, so deal with it.
And you're right, it is called The Lost Sister.
There we go.
So we'll be back next week to discuss that one.
Indeed.
It'll be interesting to examine it properly and see all the little Easter eggs about it.
We'll see how passionate I get about this episode, because I defend it with my last breath this episode.
That's like me with Max. I have to defend her in season three.
Yeah.
Gosh, which we are getting closer
we
to.
We're dangerously close to season three now. We're only, ironically, three episodes away.
Gosh. I am looking forward to it, though.
I'm looking forward to it. Yes, I always, always talk rubbish about it. And it is my least favourite season. That's a fact. But
one of them's got to be at the end of the
day. That's it. One of them has to be. And like, you know, like we were just saying, they are so out of character, especially Hopper. But, you know, it's a good episode. It's a good series. I remember the hype. I remember everything happening around it.
There'll be a lot of moments we'll pick out as being really good.
It's going to be nostalgic for me.
That's it. We've never... Going into season same. Three. Like, you
like
know...
More than these two some in some ways.
I was like in Atlanta for this.
You were in Atlanta
with
for
lovely
it.
Megan.
Yeah,
and
it was the first... It was the first season that was on its way once we were a couple.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It's big.
But yeah, all the build up to it, every, you know, they were drunk on the money but using it to throw everything at it as well.
Yeah. So no, I am excited to talk about it and really examine it, because it's a lot of people's favourite season as well, you know. So yeah, it will be good.
With it being a lot of people's favourite, I'm going to insult a lot of people and make a lot of people very angry, and our listener count is going to plummet.
Oh dear. It'll just be you and me. It'll be like an echoey podcast.
Yes.
Oh, thank you everyone who is still here for listening to the podcast today. We're sorry that it is late. It should have been out yesterday. But here we are. It'll be Sunday now.
Yeah.
That it's out. So we thank you so much for your patience. And we will be back next week. We'll be talking about The Lost Sister.
Yes, indeed. I'm looking forward to that one.
Me too. We'll see you then, everyone.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hoyle vow.
Bosta.